It is Friday, and on Friday we tend to talk about food. So joining me is my daughter-in-law, Susie, who's the understudy of Kim Holmes. So she's become the resident foodie-in-chief and was on with us right before the 4th of July. So, Susie, thanks for coming back on and doing this again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You've got fans now. People have tried your chicken parmesan recipe. I got a couple of people that texted me about, hey, tell your daughter-in-law that margarita was awesome. So your skills as a foodie and as a bartender appreciated here by people who listen.
Nice. That's awesome.
Right. And people found out about what's the name of the museum again?
The Rock Museum. Yes.
That's right. That's right. The Rock Museum. That has become more and more famous because of you're like a media personality now from Partial North Dakota representing. Now I was just in Montana, and when I was up there, you said you had you live not too far from the Montana border, but did you guys get over there a fair amount when you were a kid, or what?
So we vacationed more in South Dakota than in Montana, but my dad, he's from like a huge German Catholic family. So of course we have family that lives there now. family that lives outside of Helena.
Oh.
So yeah, so I try to make it, well, when we lived in 29 Palms, whenever I'd drive back to North Dakota, I'd always try and stop, like make it so my route like would stop there and I'd get to pop in and see them, because yeah. And I mean, Montana's gorgeous. It's kind of scary in the winter because they have like 4 snowplows for like the whole state and it's like an ice skating rink. But
Susie and I were driving through Montana and I'd never seen a snowstorm with lightning in my life. And I lived in North Dakota for 14 years. I never saw that. And yeah, that was like, whoa, what's going on? This is Montana. Is it that much different? Evidently.
Yeah. Well, they have like real mountains, though.
So you get real mountain type stuff. No, I was just outside Helena, right on the Missouri River there. And Montana, absolutely beautiful. Okay. Susie's got a couple recipes that we're going to talk about. And then she's got a drink recipe that we're also going to, because now she's noted for that after the fresh margarita recipe that she gave that was a hit. And if you haven't seen that, right, just go back and start looking for just type in margarita, right, and it'll pop right up and you'll see the episode we did talking about Susie's chicken parmesan, and which is a fan favorite here. And so the margarita thing is there as well. So all right, where do you want to start?
So I thought for food this week, since John's in the field this week, I was like, let's do a couple things that he really likes and that he requests often, especially like when he comes out of the field, and they're like quick meals, but they're also like really easy. So I have today a speedy shrimp and orzo paella. It's kind of a riff on traditional paella, but instead of taking 3 hours, it takes 20 minutes.
What is, okay, first of all, tell everybody what is kind of generic paella?
So paella is a Spanish dish, usually with like different kinds of seafood, smoked paprika. I put peas and fresh peppers and onions in mine. It's kind of like a one pot type meal. And it's like, it's a peasant food from like Spain, but of course, like that's the best food, right?
Right.
Because
always.
You have to make.
Right. I mean, menudo, I mean, all these different dishes, you know, it's funny talking to Kim about the origin of a dish, right? As you said, you know, most of the stuff that tastes really good, right, starts out as peasant food.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I agree. Like, my dad's family is German, and, like, most of the foods that I grew up with, like, loving growing up are, like, peasant peasant foods like pigs in the blanket, or like, they're like cabbage rolls, or like nefla, which is like a dumpling soup with like potatoes. But right. I figured that stuff would be kind of heavy for right now in the summer. So I
No, but no, it is amazing when you look at, you know, collard greens and some of the things that people like say, oh, it tastes so good. Well, you know, it's stuff that other people wouldn't eat, right? And so they took it and they figured out how to make it, right? Because it was cheap. And so then they figured out how much butter they could throw in, or how much bacon they had to add, or what they had to do to make it, right?
Yeah, collard greens and bacon are like a match made in heaven. Like, if you don't like that, I don't know. Like, right? We probably don't need to be friends.
Exactly. But, you know, but, and so there's so many, but there's so many dishes like that. And I mean, I didn't know too much about that. You know, when I started doing like food stuff with Kim, and so we'd talk about a recipe and I'd say, well, where does it come from? And he'd say, oh, well, you know, it's peasant food, you know, and it started, you know, chicken wings is an example. It's like, you know, people use the legs and they use the thighs and they use the breast, and the wings were kind of something set aside and not to, and then people turn it into a delicacy, right? And it starts in small town and it's cheap, and people had to, you know, people had to feed big families, you know, and so that's where it starts, and it gets raised to this art form, but it starts as peasant food.
Yeah, like speaking of chicken wings, shout out to Carrots K in Grand Forks. it's this little hole in the wall bar that I worked for like six years? Yeah, almost 6 years. And we actually went and competed in the big Buffalo Wing competition out in Buffalo, New York. And they won Most Unique Barbecue Sauce the first year they were out there. And like, I'm not going to lie, like I've had wings like all over the country. Like when John and I go somewhere, we're like, we've got to try the wings, because we know John's always going to be hungry after an entree if we don't. And be like, they're wings. They're like good. Right? They're so good, right?
Right.
And I've yet to find wings that even compare.
Really?
Yeah. Like hands down. They're just, I don't know. They're just, it's like crack. Like they put crack in the sauce. It's so good.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I didn't know they were that good.
Oh man, that's like a must stop when we go back to Grand Forks to see people, or like to see my family. Wings at the K are happening 100%.
So what's the secret to their sauce?
Well, I can't tell you. You've got to like try
give us a hint.
Robin Murray.
do they have dill? Is it more blue cheese-ish? Is it, so when you say sauce, no, is it the glaze that goes over the wings and how they prepare that? Or is it a dipping sauce?
So they do like, it's like the base is like this, they call it K butter.
Right.
And it's a thing that they whip up, and like, and when your wings come out of the fryer, they scoop in K butter, and then they use hot sauce, and then you pick a heat level, and they add that to it, and they toss it fresh. So like it's fresh sauce that goes on these like scalding hot wings, and it melts down and gets like all into them, and they're just so good. And they have Cajun fries, because they always give you like, they're so saucy. The wings are so saucy. Like you have to get Cajun fries and dip them in that, and it's just like, oh my God. It's like a heart attack on a plate, but it's so good.
My
mouth is watering talking about it.
So that is your favorite, those are your favorite chicken wings?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, like, so if you have to, I'm just trying to think, if there's a national pizza, so if you were to, I don't know, this is kind of a ghetto question, but if you order them, if you order them, do you order, like, do you like Pizza Hut chicken wings? If you order, do you like, is there any wing like that that you would say, yeah, this is what I like?
Pizza Hut, that's like nostalgia in the house. Like John is like, oh my God, when we were kids and we get the chicken wings, like we'd like fight over them. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, like it was like playing spoons, like to get as many chicken wings as you could when you guys would order them from Domino's or Pizza Hut. No, they were Pizza Hut ones, I think.
Yeah, I think they were yeah. Pizza Hut wings. But, yeah. So you don't have a preference relative to that?
No, no. But like if it's between anything and K wings, I'm like, Yeah, K-Wings. Like, why are you even giving me another
option?
Will
they deliver around the country? Will they send them out?
I don't think they're there yet. I wish they did because, well, I'm kind of glad they don't because I'd probably be like 30 pounds.
That's funny. That's funny. So we started talking about paella. So let's go back to that. So it's kind of what'd you call it? What kind of?
It's kind of like a one pot quick dish to make. Like, so typical paella is like an all day thing that people make, but I found a recipe in a magazine like years and years and years ago where I got the idea for this. And I just kind of like put my spin on it because I was like, well, that's great, but it could use some zhuzhing up. So
what zhuzhing up?
Yeah, like sprucing it up a little bit. Need a little more flavor, I thought.
Did you just make up a word?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Probably stole it from someone.
Zhuzhing is an actual word. That, all right. It's a food word. Now I understand what it is. So we're going to zhuzh it up. So. All right, so let's go through the recipe.
Okay, so depending on how hungry John is, it's either we do shrimp or I do shrimp and chorizo. And chorizo is a like Spanish style like pork sausage. So if I'm doing it with chorizo, I will cut up the chorizo, fry it up, and then I'll pull that out of the pan. And then while that's cooking up and crisping up, I have my shrimp that I've like peeled and deveined. Like you can buy them that way.
Right.
If you want to. So it like saves you some time. But I usually buy them like tail on.
What size do you buy your shrimp?
As big as I can get them.
Really?
The jumbo's from Costco.
Jumbo from Costco.
Yeah, the jumbo ones from Costco. Because they cook down. Like shrimp cook down like considerably when you cook them. So like even if you get medium sized shrimp, they look like those little salad shrimp after you cook them down. And that's like you want like a big shrimp, like a big bite of shrimp.
Right.
So and then I toss the shrimp in a little bit of olive oil, chopped up garlic and smoked paprika. And then I cook them in a little bit of olive oil and that rendered fat from the chorizo. And once your shrimp are cooked, you pull those out and then everything else you just kind of like start dumping in and like adding to it. So I add a little bit more oil to the pan and then I put in some diced onion and diced red bell pepper. I sprinkle a little bit of paprika on and then instead of using rice, I use a pasta called orzo. It's small and it kind of looks like rice. I've made it for you guys before. I made like a like lemon herby thing when I used the lemons in your backyard to make side dish one time. I think one of the last times I was out there. Yeah. And then
And let me just explain that. What happened was the last time Susie and John were out here and my grandson, Finn, we kind of set up the meals and, you know, we kind of rotated, but we set one night aside because of Susie's cooking ability. Like, okay, we think it'd be a good idea if you guys made dinner tonight. And so Susie did. And she crushed it.
I took in John's
pieces. Yeah. Well, hey, let me tell you, one of the great things about having sons that have been in the kitchen business is they can do some dishes. And my kids take pride in doing it. They go out to the kitchen and they get after it. And but I will tell you what, my oldest son, John, Susie's husband, he's gifted dishwasher. I mean, no kidding.
Facts.
he's a good.
When we first started dating, I'm telling you, I was like a tornado in the kitchen. It wasn't like I would like clean as I'd go. I'd be like, oh, I'm making a masterpiece. I'll just get to it later. And it was like, what did you make? I'm like, mac and cheese. He's like, why did you use 87 dishes to make mac and cheese? And I was like, that's a good point. There's opportunities for growth here.
Plus we have a dishwasher, so we'll just throw them in there at some point. When they were kids, Thanksgiving in particular, bigger meals, you know, that would get prepared, you know, we'd turn music on in the kitchen and everybody except my ex-wife Susan, everybody would be out there doing dishes. And then Susie wouldn't even come out because we were all having such a good time and whatnot. And always, so it's kind of a little art form to trick them into like liking doing dishes because you need them to do them. But no. We had a special night for John and Susie to get in the kitchen so that we could get Susie to cook us food, and she crushed it. What's the rice kind of thing?
It's called orzo.
Orzo. Is it a wheat product? Is it a rice? What?
Yes. Yep. It's a pasta. Yep.
Got it. All right.
So it's really small. It kind of looks like basmati rice, but it's like a tiny little pasta grain is what it looks like.
Got it.
But yeah, it's awesome. Like if you want to make like quick dinners, and it cooks super, super fast. And the way you do this, you don't even drain it. It's just kind of like all one pot thing. So like after you've sauteed your veggies, you just put your orzo in and then pour chicken stock on top of that and let it get so it's like simmering, turn it down and cover it up. And then you just wait 10 minutes, pull it off, stir it around. And then you throw your meat back in just to warm it through because it's already been cooked, like your sausage and your shrimp. And then I like peas and fresh parsley. So I'll just take frozen peas like from the freezer and throw a cup in and just like stir it around for like a minute or two. And they'll warm through and fresh parsley right before we serve it. And it's done. It literally like from start to finish, it probably takes like 20 minutes and it's so good.
Okay. Tell me about are there any, you use any spices with it or?
Yeah. Smoked paprika, garlic, and I use a little bit of saffron in the chicken broth and people are like, oh, saffron, it's so expensive, but you only use like a couple like little threads of it and it lasts like a really long time. And little inside tip, you can usually find it at TJ Maxx for like really cheap and it's really quality stuff. So fun fact.
Fun Check fact. There Maxx. You go. I like that. All right. So what do you serve it with?
So I just serve it like by itself, like in a bowl, like it makes like a pretty decent amount. So like this one recipe, if you do two meats can serve up to six people, a reasonable meal, and then you can serve a salad with it, or you can serve myself, Finn, and John can have lunch for tomorrow for the next day with it. So, but yeah, it serves like 4 to 6.
Got it.
And it's really easy to double and like manipulate to like what you like and don't like. Like you could put different kinds of seafood in it if you're not a fan of shrimp, or you could just leave the shrimp out. I've made it for my grandparents before because my grandfather has a shellfish allergy, so he can't have the shrimp. So I've made it for him with just chicken breast that I've rubbed with smoked paprika. Yeah, it's really versatile.
Got it. So you've made it with shrimp and then you've made it with shrimp and chorizo. I mean, could you throw chicken in there? I mean, is there anything?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So obviously, you know, you can meat, poultry, you know, chicken, whatever, which happens to be poultry, yeah. But you could do that, whatever you want.
That's the nice thing about it though. You can kind of like customize it to whatever like your tastes are. So it's not like,
right.
Yeah, and there's so many different varieties of paella. Like this definitely is like not traditional. So like, don't come at me because it's not traditional.
I know. Oh, no, I know what paella. My family makes paella. That's not paella. Okay, we got it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We know. It's like, 15 hours, right, in the pan with all the rest of that stuff. We got it.
Yeah. I mean, but the name of the recipe is Cheater's Paella, so it's not really real paella, but it's good.
Look, I think the criteria is that it's good and that, you know, we could give it a different name if you really want to get sticky, but it's based on the paella recipe or the paella concept. And so,
yeah.
I don't know, right? You say tomato, I say tomato. As long as it tastes good, who gives a crap?
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
All right, let's talk about what's second. Anything, any other coordinating instructions with that recipe that you want to make sure people know?
No, it's pretty. I guess the only thing that I do that I didn't mention is I do, like, when I measure out my stock, I'll put it in the microwave and warm it up just so it's like warm stock going into a warm pan so it doesn't shock the ingredients you have in there. So that saves you some time too. So like while your veggies are sauteing, you can have that measured out and just throw it in the microwave for a minute or two and then just dump it on in. But other than that, no, it's pretty straightforward.
So you don't like to shock the broth?
Yeah.
You're gentle on your broth?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like when you make risotto, you want to work with like warm broth so the rice doesn't get shocked. So then it just cooks more evenly so you don't have, it just tastes better.
No, I mean, I'm stupid. I'm like cooking stupid, but I guess, it's the same concept as not shocking meat or poultry by letting it, you don't take it out of the refrigerator and then throw it on the grill because it shocks the meat, right. It shocks the poultry, whatnot. So the same concept.
You want to let it sit out and let it kind of come up to room temperature so you can get like that nice char on your protein.
Right. All right, let's...
segue into like the second thing that I had ready to share with you tonight. So John loves steak. Like that's no surprise to anybody. So usually when he, we've kind of started a tradition, like without really saying that it's a tradition, that like when he comes out of the field, like I always make him steak for dinner, and he loves ribeyes or T-bones. And we just, we actually just went and bought half a cow from a local farmer here. So we are stocked on beef for the foreseeable future, like freezer's full to the brim. And we've got some pretty good steaks in there, but I was
And you and I were talking about this the last time I was there, but it's like grass fed, right? Yeah, you got
so good.
Really?
Oh my God. Yeah. So good. Well, next time you're out, we'll show you.
All right. All right. I didn't mean to interrupt. Keep going.
Oh no, you're good.
So what's the name of the recipe that we're going to talk about?
So, the steak that I make for John, it's a ribeye steak with garlic and thyme brown butter.
All right, let's talk about garlic and thyme brown butter. How do you do that?
Okay, so the way I do it is. So I take my steak out first, you pat your steaks dry, and then like I generously season them with salt and let them sit for 10 minutes. And then I cook my steaks in a cast iron skillet. So I heat that up so it's screaming hot and use olive oil, or not olive oil, don't use olive oil, it's got too low a smoking point, but like I'll use like a canola oil because it's got a high smoking point, or avocado oil. And once that's hot, you put your steaks in and sear them for 3 minutes on each side. Then you flip them, and then when I do that, I throw butter into the pan and on top of the steak on the side that's cooked, fresh thyme sprigs, and then just take whole cloves of garlic and smash it, pull off the the husk, and just put it in there and let it continue cooking the rest of the time, and that's it.
That's it?
That's it.
That's it?
And then that's it. Like, don't touch it. Like, flip it once. Don't touch it.
This is what always confuses me, right? And that is this. All right. So the cast iron skillet's on high.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now I sear it for 3 minutes on one side and 3 minutes on the other. And then what? And then
you pull it out of the pan
and put it.
And you
let it sit.
Yeah, you let it sit for 10 minutes.
Got it.
Just let it rest because like all those juices are going to like stay inside that meat and keep it like super, super juicy. Also, like if you have a thinner steak, don't do it that long. We like our steak rare, medium rare. So if you want like more of a medium, you can definitely go a little bit longer. But yeah, rare, medium rare, I think is where it's at for those kind of steaks. But then, so once you've removed your steaks from the pan, you still have like that garlic in there and you have those thyme sprigs. What I do is I just take like a couple more pats of butter and let it, cause the pan's still hot. Even if you turn it off, like cast iron skillets, like I'm sure you know this, like they hold on to heat. Like,
well, that's why I asked, because I'm always wary of, burning the steak or, creating something that's well done But you don't sound like you're worried about that. So 3 minutes on each side, screaming hot, and then into the foil.
I'm more worried about using, I don't even use foil. I just like put it on a plate and like just make like a foil tent, but don't really like seal it in there because then it can steam. And then you risk like kind of get your meat kind of getting rubbery and it loses that really hard salt sear that you work to get on there from using that cast iron skillet.
You know what? That's,
so yeah.
That's a good point.
I don't
you
do the gym,
might
though.
Have just, you might have just went by Kim Holmes.
Oh, shoot. We may have a different opinion.
Because let me tell you, that's happened to me because when you pack it in foil, that's what you get. It steams, right?
Yeah, because it's still coming out. It's coming out of there and holding on to the heat from that that skillet for sure.
Interesting.
And then Don actually taught me this trick. So you put the butter back in the like more butter in the pan, right? So it like melts down, and because it's so hot, it's gonna like start to naturally like brown those fats that are in the butter, and it'll like kind of separate out, and that's where you get like that brown butter from, and you have that garlic in there and all that salt from the meat and the fat that's rendered from the meat.
Yeah.
And so I make homemade bread, and we take that and we cut that into like slices. You could take like any kind of bread, and we'll like with the pan off the heat, we just put it in all that brown butter that like the drippings and it soaks it up. So you make like a toast, like you just let it sit there and flip it and you serve it with the toast or with the steak. And John told me he actually learned that from Susan's dad. So
Dr. Drake?
Yeah. So like you take the toast and like you put it in like all the steak drippings and oh my God.
He shared
it with Finn the other night, which we don't typically do. We're like, yeah, we don't want to share with him if he doesn't like it. Like, then it's just a waste. But he was like, you guys, have you ever dipped your steak in this sauce that's in the pan? He's like, it's blowing my mind. Like a 4-year-old says, it's blowing my mind. Like, are you kidding me?
That's funny. No, I'm. You know what? I remember at the dinner table, he would he told this story about growing up, and his father would, you know, at the big dinner table, he would cut the meat for everybody, right? The roast or whatever. And, you know, you'd have, you know, the drippings of the juice, and the girls always got the first dib because there was so much iron in the juice and the girls needed iron more than the boys did. And like, I don't know if that's true, but that's the story he would tell. Right? He would
tell. That's the story I'm going to tell the next time.
give me that. We need iron more than you do. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Don't you know anything? Women need this more than boys do. So thank you. But yeah, he was serious. And I even think that they even like maybe even put some in a shot glass. And like here's the juice, and so yeah, so that's sore. But you kind of grill it, right? So it's not like you don't dip it in the juice. It's the gurry left over from grilling, and the bread goes into the skillet.
Yep.
That sounds
good.
They're
like those. It's really good.
It sounds like a form of almost like French toast, you know what I mean? Not French toast, French bread, in that it's kind of a grilled bread.
Yeah, baguette would be great for that.
Do you flip it?
Like I usually like set a timer for like 3 to 5 minutes, depending on how, like if I remember to pull the bread out of the freezer. Like half the time I forget to pull the bread out of the freezer, but they're like, it's like my mom's bread recipe, so it's a softer bread.
Right.
So, I mean, you can still cut through it even when it's frozen. So sometimes I'll throw it in there like that. But if it's not frozen, it's a lot quicker.
Okay. And
it's a lot less likely to mess up. Like my women in my family, like my mom and I especially, are like notorious for like lighting garlic bread on fire because we forgot about it under the broiler. That's why whenever you come to visit, I'm like, hey, you got that garlic bread, right?
I grew up and I learned how to make garlic bread for my mom, and, you know, but she did things that I didn't like, right? And one of the things I learned was she didn't put enough butter on the edges, so the edges would have no butter on them, so they would burn quick. And so I would make sure that there was a lot more butter on the edges. And then the other thing I learned how to do was just stand there and stare at the bread, because I would walk away from it too. But I like it too much, right? And especially, and I don't eat it so much anymore because I don't eat wheat. My body doesn't take wheat very well. But when I do, right, it's got a ton of butter on it and garlic salt. Not so much garlic salt, but it's got a lot of butter, right? And then Parmesan cheese, shake it on it. And I'm telling you, if you'll stand there and stare at it and take it out when it's golden brown, to die for. It's an art form, honestly. It's an art form. Yeah. So I'm a fan of that. That's why it sounds like what you're doing. Now, have you ever tried it with a baguette?
Yeah. We've done it with baguette before too.
Do you have a preference?
Because usually like on baguette or my mom's bread, bread, like hands down. So
you're
good.
Such a good daughter. That was so the right thing to say.
Process makes, so like when people ask for the recipe, I'm like, okay, but this takes 6 hours. I mean, like most of it is you just like waiting for the bread to like proof. But people are like, oh, 6 hours. And I'm like, I mean, I'll give you the recipe, but start in the morning. Like, don't try to do it at night. You'll be up for a while.
What's normal for bread? I'm bread stupid.
You know what? I just really got into making bread when we lived out in California, just because I missed my mom's homemade bread so much. And that's really, really like the only bread I've really experimented with. Like I've done a couple like beer breads and whatnot, but like typically I'd say if you're not doing like, a quick rise yeast, or if you're doing one without yeast, you can probably get away with making bread in an hour and a half. But I'd say if you're doing one with the yeast where it needs to proof, like total time, probably about 3 hours to make bread. Cause it's just got to sit and rise and do it.
So what's different about your mom's bread that makes it take 6 hours?
So it's got to raise 3 different times.
Ooh.
So you mix it and you make it into like the big ball. And then that rests for an hour, and then you punch it down, and then it rises for another hour, and then you have to roll out the buns or the rolls, and that takes, it makes about like, I want to say between 5 and 6 dozen rolls.
Right.
So, I mean, it takes a little bit of time, and there's like, I still haven't mastered her technique. Like hers are like these perfectly symmetrical commercial looking buns, and mine sometimes kind of just like lumps, but you have to weigh them out too. So that's really a whole process. And then that has to rise again. And then you can only cook them one pan at a time. So you can only cook like 15 buns at a time. And it takes 15 to 17 minutes for each one to cook, depending on what kind of pan you have. Like it's a whole.
Okay. So,
but it's so good. And I only have to do it like once every 6 weeks. So it's like, it's okay.
And then they last for 6 weeks.
Yeah, so I throw them in the freezer after they've cooled, and then we just pull out like what we need every few days and just let them thaw on the counter. And that way they stay fresh. But yeah, they keep in the freezer. They probably keep in the freezer for like up to 6 months.
Whoa. Okay. Now, so I want to go over the steak, seasoning. So the cast iron skillet's on high. Right.
Yep.
And it's 3 minutes on each side. And that's about how thick is your steak?
Mine are usually like about an inch and a half.
Okay. All right.
Inch to an inch and a half.
We
like them thick.
Right. So if you have a thinner steak, you're warned that you're probably, if you don't watch that thing and if you don't cut the time, you're going to have a well done steak. And hope you like your steak like that. And so pay attention.
Salty
shoe
leather.
All right, let's talk about so what goes in. You're going to oil the steak with, you said avocado oil or canola oil?
Yeah, I use avocado or canola oil. It kind of depends on what I have on hand.
All right.
But just because it has, I like to use those because they have higher smoking points, which means like your oil, you can heat it up to a higher temp without it creating all that smoke.
Got it. Because
animal fat has a low smoking point. So like, you know, like when you put like a burger on a pan, like the smoke comes off, that's like heat and the fat, like just doing their thing.
Got it. But, all right. So let's talk about now. So you're going to oil the, you're going to oil the steak and you've got the,
oil a pan.
What's just the pan, not the steak.
Just a pan. Don't oil the steak.
Okay.
Dry. You want to pat the steak dry so it doesn't have any of the extra moisture on it. Like take a paper towel and like literally pat it dry.
Pat it dry. Okay. And then now the seasoning again. Go over those instructions.
You sprinkle salt on both sides like generously and that's it. I don't do pepper because in the cast iron, I feel like the pepper can taste kind of scorched. Like you can add pepper afterwards to your steak. Like I think that's a great idea. But I just do salt. Like I do like a flaky sea salt, but you can just use run of the mill salt.
I was going to ask you, do you use kosher salt? So, but you use flaky sea salt?
Yeah, kosher sea salt is what I use like for the majority of salt in our house. But I did just buy this like big flaky sea salt. Trader Joe's got me. They always like, ooh, new product. And I'm like, okay, I'll take five. But every time I go there, they get me. They had this large flaky salt and we made steaks last week and holy crap, so good.
Really? Okay. So the salt and then what else? So that goes right? That goes on one side, right? And then the salt and then now, wait a minute. I thought there was thyme or something.
Oh yeah. I thought you were saying before it goes in the pan. So yeah, like you salt both the sides and then you put the steak in the pan, cook it for 3 minutes.
Right.
And then when you flip it, you throw in a couple pats of butter, whole garlic cloves that you've just smashed. Like don't chop them up, just smash them, keep them whole.
Got it.
And then some thyme sprigs, like just grab like three or four.
But you're only doing that on after you flip it. So you don't do it on each, you don't do it that and then flip it and then, okay.
No, because you're just seasoning the butter with that thyme.
Got it.
And if your thyme is really fresh, it might pop back at you just because there's moisture in it. So be warned. It might spit back at you, but it'll taste good. It's worth it.
And you don't, when you're doing the steak, you don't cover it. You don't cover it with any kind of like glass covering that comes with a lot of,
No way.
You can't.
I think my smoke alarm doesn't go off though, because.
Well, come on. We use the oil with the higher flash point. So come on, right?
It's not foolproof, but it definitely increases your chances of not setting off smoke.
All right, there's your disclaimer right there. The all right, let's talk about a drink recipe. Now you have to. So can you send me pictures of both recipes? And I mean, can you ask your mom if you can give us the bread recipe, if she'd be okay with that, or if she feel violated in some way, shape or form that, you know, that you should.
She'd be totally okay with it. I might have to rewrite it though, because I feel like moms do this thing where then they write down recipes. They purposely leave an important tip or like point out. So you have to call them and be like, hey, mine didn't turn out like yours. Why is that?
You think they do that on purpose?
I totally think they do it on purpose. Like, I'll probably do it to, like, Finn's, like, future girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
I'll be like, oh, did I forget that in there? Nothing's better than mom.
And while I have you on the phone, I've been meeting, right? No, I didn't realize that. That's actually, there's a little bit of genius in that. Always sowing in those seeds. The,
Susan makes those hot hamburger sandwiches. Yes. You know the ones?
Yes.
And the steak rolls. Oh, my God. They're so good. Mine don't taste like hers.
Really?
It's like, I gave you the recipe. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm suspicious.
Withholding those key ingredients again. Those are actually my mom's. My mom developed those. They started out as something on the top of French bread. And then she started out and she added Worcestershire sauce. And, you know, she chopped up green onions and she's like, she put that they actually appear in a recipe book that she submitted a recipe to. I don't know. Somebody did it for fundraising purposes and Kathy McNamara's home runs.
Yeah, they're bomb.
They're, like, my friends, you can imagine. My mom, when she made them, she would make them, and I'd tell my friends, hey, you want to come over? My mom's making sandwiches. They'd be like, I'm on my way. And she would make, potato wedges with them, right? So whole potato cut in fours. And she'd, you know, fry the French fries, and you'd have these big potato wedges with those sandwiches. And those were huge. My friends loved them. But, well, I didn't think she'd leave the ingredients out. That's pretty.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's, like, totally intentional.
Oh, don't back away from it. You have to own it.
I could totally see myself doing it. I'd be like, yeah, no, my recipe.
You could have 90% of it, but nobody makes it like his mommy.
Yeah exactly.
All right, let's talk about a drink.
It goes back to chicken wings.
Exactly.
Okay, so this is a drink from my childhood that my dad used to make for me that you can either have with kids or you can make it a little bit more grown up if you want to. Too. It's a knockoff of orange. Do you know what Orange Julius is?
I do.
Yeah. So it's like a knockoff of that.
Okay. Let's hear it.
And it's super easy. Okay. So you need that frozen orange juice concentrate.
Yeah.
So you need a can of that.
Just, 12 ounce?
Dump everything in the blender.
12 ounce?
Yeah. Can? Yeah. Okay. 12 ounces.
Got it.
I'd have to look. But so it's a 12 ounce can of that. And then you do a cup of milk, a cup of water, a quarter cup of sugar, and a teaspoon of vanilla extract. And then you blend that all up. And then you just, you know, in the hole in the top of your blender, you can like drop ice cubes in.
Right.
You just drop them in until it's like the thickness that you want it to be. And then that's it.
That's it.
But yeah. But if you want it to be a really yummy brunch cocktail, you just throw a little bit of spiced rum in there. Money.
Spiced rum.
Yeah. Like, get a little captain in you.
Now, if you're doing this and you're making a blender full, you know, because there's my ex-wife's father used to make these things called Frosties that are a favorite of mine.
Sorry, I got the answer, but I'm like, I can't call out that. That's not my recipe.
But, and so it's...
Make me for like Sunday breakfast, minus the rum, when we were kids.
Right. And the proportions are 6 ounces of frozen concentrate lemonade, 6 ounces of vodka, and a little splash for the Pope, and then ice, and then water to raise it so it's the right consistency. So how much rum goes in this when you're doing the adult version of it?
So I would probably do 4 ounces, and then I'd probably do triple sec too, just because I like that extra citrusy flavor with it. I think it'll balance it out, like some of the sweetness from like the sugar and like the concentrate, because it's supposed to be like a sweet, it kind of tastes like a creamsicle. So like you want a little bit of acidity from that triple sec to kind of like balance it out.
Got it.
But yeah, it's good. But
and what is
John,
that, what is that thing? Well, what is that thing called?
I just call it like a spiked orange Julius. I don't really have a name. I should probably think of a different name.
The partial something.
I'll ask my dad for a name for it. He's the one that used to make it for us.
Yeah. Tell him to give it some kind of exotic name.
Yeah. Exotic North Dakota.
Exactly. The North Dakota something. Right? Right.
So. Yeah. Something.
All right. Now you were going to say something.
The first time John made Doc's Frosties for me.
Yes.
I mean, like, well, you know, like the first time you had them, you're like, whoa, these are ridiculous. And so like, I'm like, you should call these Sip and Go Nakeds, because that's like what's going to happen if you don't warn people about them, because they're just sneaky. Like, dangerous.
Well, I mean, the first time I had them, I was over at my what would be my future in-laws' house, and they had 8 kids, and a few of them were around, and it was a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and I don't know what I'd been doing, but it was hot, and so they whip up this concoction. And again, it's the simplest thing. It's a blender full of ice, you know, half the thing of lemonade concentrate. And now, but back in the day, they used to have 6 ounce cans. So you could buy the 12 ounce can or the 6 ounce can. So they would just buy the 6 ounce can, dump the whole thing in, fill it with vodka, dump that in. My father-in-law would always put a splash in for the Pope, and then he'd fire up this blender, and then he would yell, "We got a batch." And then I didn't know there was vodka in them. And so the first day, as it turns out, I have this, and it's like a lemonade icy, and it's delicious, and it's hot. And so I fire one down, and then I had a second one, and I'm halfway through the third, and I can't feel my lips anymore. And I'm biting my lips, and I said, "Do these have alcohol in them?" And they look at me like, "What?" I'm like, "Is there booze in these? Because I can't feel the front of my face." And they're like, "Hello, you might want to slow down." And I was like, "You might want to warn somebody." And they're like, "Come on, everybody knows these things have booze in them." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, maybe I should throttle back on the lemonade icy." But let me just tell you, it is a great drink. It's a great summer drink and very tasty. And like Susie said, very easy to make. And the North Dakota Orange Julius is with rum. Has a few more ingredients. How much triple sec do you use?
Probably two. I usually do two shots. When I do triple sec, it's like, so like whatever my main liquor is, I'll do like half that amount of triple sec. So like, yeah.
Got it.
One to two or two to one. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. If you're doing four shots of rum, two shots of triple sec.
Four shots of rum? Isn't that 8 ounces?
Isn't a shot like 1 ounce?
I thought it was two.
You're making stuff really boozy around here.
Yeah, exactly. that's why everybody staggers out of our house. Hold on. How much is in a shot glass? Survey says there is no standard size for a single shot except in Utah, where a shot is defined as one fluid ounce, 30 milliliters. Elsewhere in the U.S., the standard size is generally considered to be 1.25 to 1.5 fluid ounces. A double shot in the U.S. may be 2 fluid ounces or more. So, oh my God, Susie.
So the answer is,
one. One-ish, right?
Just eyeball it.
There you go. Eyeball it. You could actually measure it if you care to. That way you would actually know. But that's only if you want to get hung up on stuff like that. If you just want to have a good time, you're just like, oh, this looks about right.
Well, I mean, like you've seen me cook when you're like, can I get a recipe? I'm like, oh, crap. I'm like, I just threw stuff in a pot. I'm like, yeah, I got it. I'll get it.
Well, actually,
it'll be cool to fish.
About a month ago, we were having Sunday dinner here or something. And so normally my ex will come over and our two daughters join us and we all have dinner. And so I was making Frosties. And so my daughter Catherine was going to make them. I'm like, you do not know what you're doing. Okay, just get out of here. So I take she's like, that's too much vodka. I said, you don't know what you're talking about. Get out of the kitchen. Right. And so I made them. I said, here you go. And then Susan yelled, that's it. I said, there you go. That's look, it's a time-honored tradition. Okay. 6 ounces, 6 ounces, a dash for the Pope, fill it to the brim, let it rip, and then have a good time.
That makes that.
All right. You know, Susie, first of all, I want to thank you for coming back on and doing this and pitch hitting for the chef, his favorite foodie, and continuing to make partial North Dakota proud. Anything that I haven't asked you about any one of these, actually four food items, right? The poor man's paella, your mom's rolls, your steak concoction, and the North Dakota Orange Julius, the Western North Dakota Orange Julius.
There we go.
There you go. Represent.
I think we got it pretty covered. I think we're, good to go.
All right. Are there any new developments at the outdoor preschool that I love so much?
Well, Finn's coming into his last week of camp next week, so he's kind of bummed out about that. They're building on like a new addition to it too, and they've built like, and when you were there last time, they had started building like the new like kind of loop around driveway, so we weren't all on top of each other when we were going to drop the kids off, and that's come along really great. It looks awesome. But we accidentally got a new family member. I don't know if you've been caught up on.
You know what? I saw bits and pieces of that, but it's a cat that crawled in John's engine?
Yeah, so this little 2-pound kitten crawled up into John's engine block and hitched a ride from Lejeune to him running errands in Jacksonville back to our house on a day that it was like raining like crazy a few weeks ago. So long story short, we had some people come to our door and they're like, hey, we saw a cat jump from one of your vehicles to the other one. We ended up getting it out and we're like, do you guys want to take it? We're like, we don't know what to do with it. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll take it. We'll just take it to the vet tomorrow and like, we'll be done with it. Well, no, no one claimed it. And Finn fell in love with it. So we have a new family member.
Does the new family member have a name now?
He does. Well, when we first found him, we thought he was a she. So his name was Luna for a couple of days. And then Luna finally got comfortable around us and stretched out. And I made the mistake of saying, oh, not Luna. Luna's got some beans. And Finn loved that. So his name is Beans.
Beans? That's a great.
Beans.
Plus the name has a story, right? That's always better. That's always better. Why would you name your cat Beans?
Or anything like we had like all these like Rider or Hitch, like he hitched a ride and or Gizmo or like anything. He's like, no, Mom, it's Beans. It's Beans.
I said Montana because I was in Montana. That was my suggestion. But Susie said somebody's got a cat named Montana something.
My aunt, she's my dad's cousin, so it's just easier to call her my aunt, that lives in Montana. She has a cat named Tony Montana.
That was not what I was thinking. Right, it was not. Yeah. I was thinking Montana, the beauty and majesty of Montana, and then it took a turn on me. I'm like, all right, never mind. I withdraw my submission. Anyway. Yeah. All right, Susie. First of all, thank you so much for staying up late and doing this. I appreciate it. And if you can see fit to send me pictures of those recipes, what you have, I'll post it. And thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
There you have it. That is my daughter-in-law, Susie, live from Holly Springs.
Ridge, close. You got half of it.
Holly Ridge, North Carolina, where Susie, my son John, and my grandson live. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.